In today's video, we speak with author and researcher Matt Arrett, the Canadian Patriot, on topics of satanic mind war operations, elite cults, new age UFO psyops, and the ritualistic crusades. Make sure to smash that like button and enjoy. Yo, what up? It's Donut, and you tuning in to all your Illuminati news. We got Matt Arrett here, Matthew Arrett, the Canadian Patriot. Huge fan. Just so grateful that you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really happy to be with you. And I really enjoy your channel. And like we were just chatting a little bit before you hit record, I really appreciate the way that you're taking really heavy, otherwise kind of scary concepts and making it very palatable for people to really just take it in, think about reality as it is. And yeah, it can be a creepy as sin, but you got to also find the humor in the whole thing too, because there's a crazy factor, which is foolish and kind of nuts. And it's the content around which I think great tragedians and artists would, and humorous satirists would normally have a field day with. So I think you're doing a good service to the legacy of Jonathan Swift and others of the past, who we need more of that today.
A lot of your research looking into conspiracies, the occult, the Satanists, and everybody, you got to go check out Canadian Patriot Matt Arrett, author. Him and his wife. I just ordered your wife's book. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, that's heavy reading right there. But she did a brilliant job. The Empire in Which the Black Sun Never Set, that one right there. It's a behemoth, 430 pages. It's volume one of three. It goes deeper than I've ever seen anybody go. And I'm not just saying this because it's my wife, but she has gone deeper into the roots of fascism going into the 19th century with an appreciation for epistemological warfare, the mind wars used by intelligence agencies, especially with an appreciation for the geopolitical dynamics of Venice and how the Venetian oligarchs took control of England, making it an empire, how this thing is tied to the ancient evil cults of Rome and earlier Babylon. Like, she's got a lot that she's bringing to the table that's setting the stage for what the hell is fascism in the first place, and how did it not really disappear, but just was rebranded after World War II with things like Operation Gladio that she goes deeply into, and the whole like enmeshment of the Nazi fascist apparatus into NATO, into the U.S. British intelligence services. That's still, unfortunately, for those who are still in Kool-Aid sipping land, they're probably not watching your show, actually. So everybody watching your show recognizes that's still a big, big, big factor in everything shaping our world and our culture, going down to matters of the arts, the music, the TV shows, the Hollywood films. A lot of the things we think are We underappreciate sometimes the subtle cultural influences that shape our identity and how we think and how we feel and how our instincts and judgment processes are shaped or influenced. Nothing is untouched by this. Now, that doesn't mean that we're victims and have no free will for an agency that we were born into. That doesn't mean that either. But it does mean that we have a power to self-examine in a way that the oligarchy doesn't want us to, and to take the good and leave the bad. You know, like, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater regarding our whole culture. Like, the reason why it works is because there are elements that are authentic in all of the things that the oligarchy has also used. So you don't want to throw away the authentic crap just because the Beatles were a satanic, or I don't even think the Beatles themselves knew it, as far as the individual members, maybe Paul McCartney. I don't think that they fully understood what the hell they were a part of, but just because there was a higher agency that wanted to bring in a British invasion with a new age reform of the human culture that the Beatles were a part of, doesn't mean that everything regarding music is also bad. There's good things from the popular cultural music scene as well that we want to be able to use for the side of justice towards the good. That's something I'm just throwing out there as well, because I know a lot of people, they start looking into this stuff and then they break down because they're like, it's too heavy.
This Anglo-American establishment, that's kind of like what is been transferring my thought process. You're in Canada, and you did this report that Canada is fictitious, that it doesn't exist. It's part of the British Empire. Then you just look at the money, and then that like pretty much proves it. This guy, Carol Quigley, the American, Anglo-American establishment.
For sure. And it's connected. His research, especially on the Anglo-American establishment, published after he died. He didn't want it to be published while he was alive. And when you read it, you understand kind of why. he was part of the establishment himself. You know, he was the guy who was a teacher of Bill Clinton. He helped Bill Clinton become a Rhodes Scholar. So this guy knew the insides of how some of the machinations work. And whether there's a dispute on whether or not Carroll Quigley is himself a part of the New World Order operation or not, I don't think he is. I sense in reading, especially the Anglo-American establishment, that he's critical. He wishes that it wasn't the case, but he doesn't have the courage or I think the level of cultural understanding and development within him to properly do anything about it. The best thing he could do is what he did. Now, that book, though, it does get across that not only is it a big fallacy, a modern myth that was created telling us that the British Empire dissolved itself, gave the liberty to its colonies, and now it's the American Empire. That's a myth. It's a myth highly tied into the story that there is such a thing as a sovereign nation state of Canada or Australia or New Zealand. That's another myth. There is, obviously, on a mechanical structure, yes, there is something called Canada. Yeah, and there are laws and, you know, a charter of rights, whatever the hell that is. But even that's a bit of an illusion, because when you look at it, like, Canada was created by the British. It's still a part of the British Commonwealth. It's run, if you look at those who influenced policy in Canada, very little of it for the last 150 years, since it was sort of officially created in its modern form, comes out of anybody who's elected or representative of the people. The majority of it comes from such bodies like the lieutenant governors managing each of the provinces, unelected individuals, usually affiliated with the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem, otherwise known as one branch, an Anglican, Protestant Anglican branch of the Knights Hospitaller, a sort of competitor for the Templars. So that's part of what goes into managing the provinces. You have the governor general, you have a privy council office, you've got a prime minister's office of unelected deputy ministers. The whole thing is like one deep state operation, and it was done largely for geopolitical purposes. As I go through in my Untold History of Canada book series, specifically to keep the USA, which has a deep state just like we do, except the difference is the USA has a deeper authentic root foundation, and the deep state is sort of this thing that latched onto it in the early days after the American Revolution. Whereas in Canada, it's sort of built in, it's rooted in the constitutional structure of Canada per se, whereas the authentic part of nation state, which is the consent of the governed, the elected representation of the people, that's sort of an add-on. It, at different times, it has done good, and there have been heroes in Canada's history who have been murdered, who are trying to do good things, who did do good things and have been scrubbed out of our history books. That's something we, you know, I myself and a few friends who are working with me pulled a lot of this suppressed history out, hence the book series. The idea was to keep Canada as a wedge between the danger of U.S.-Russian friendship and alliance around economic development, especially on the Arctic. And the idea, like in the U.S., it was the fact that Ben Franklin and George Washington made the point to call it the Continental Congress when it was still only 13 colonies. Why did they do that? Well, it's obviously there was a broader grand design, a fight against the oligarchy to kick out the hereditary structures of power, which was at the time, you know, Spanish, French, British, big time. Structures that were all imperial, vying for different control of the North American continent and South America. And the idea was to create a new type of society based upon the consent of the governed, the concept that everybody is sovereign because we all, not one sovereign, but everybody is sovereign because we all have a soul. We're made in the image of God. We can all self-perfect and self-examine when we're being citizens and not just obedient subjects, but real citizens, which means you need a citizen culture, which means a culture that pursues the cultivation and love and pleasure of the higher things, the love of discovery, the love of sharing, the love of doing good, versus the purely, you know, I like eating cake and getting wasted on Friday, right? That's the pleasures of the freedom of the slave.
Give them cake.
Let them eat cake. Yeah. And so, This is the nature of sort of that subtle fight culturally that a lot of people miss. It's not just a political economic fight. It's a cultural fight, which is why Ben Franklin, who understood this very deeply, was also, he worked himself to become the highest quality scientific mind of the world in which he lived, because he understood that he needed to demonstrate as a living proof of principle that he, not being from some high family, but, and not even having an elite education. I think he had a grade 3 education, but just through the pure rigorous love of truth and self-discipline, which he sort of outlines a little bit in his autobiography for people who want to tap into some of that source that he wrote a manual for how do you do that? How do you find that sovereignty inside yourself in his very short, highly readable autobiography? He's like, okay, I'm going to discover something very important about the entire universe in the form of what the hell is this electric fire coming out of the sky burning down villages? And by his act of discovering and generating a fruitful hypothesis that bore fruit, that carried with it, there you go. You can get it on archive.org. All these books are wonderfully available for now on archive.org. He's like, okay, I can demonstrate that the power of the human species is capable of becoming more in harmony with the entirety of God's creation by making new discoveries and inventions, which we're free to do once the discovery is made. And now we're obedient to that new truth that was unknown formerly. And now you can have lightning rods, you can communicate with electricity, things like the Morse code system emerged out of his discoveries. And he was already talking about communications across the oceans with electricity back then. There's a whole variety of things you could do, but that came with it a sense that the whole economy is transformed by a new discovery, which is something immaterial, right? Like a discovery, it doesn't exist in one spot. It exists beyond the brain, but it requires the brain to happen, but it isn't in the brain in any location, which is a very important philosophical idea, because that means that something immaterial, an idea, which is true, can be proven to be true by its application in the material domain, which requires the interface of the political technology of society. You need a government that allows or encourages the transference of an individual good idea to the society as a whole, the education system, which allows for, encourages the creation of good citizens who can incorporate new discoveries and not get too rigid in the old way of doing things. So you need a flexibility, which means a confidence in oneself that is something oligarchical systems of education despise. They want good, obedient, little cogs in a machinery.
Right, right. Today being Friday the 13th, what it seems like a crusade is happening. And while this is happening, the new Assassin's Creed just was released like the day before all this destabilization in Eurasia. I kind of want to know what your thoughts are. You just did this wonderful video. Is there a connection to today being Friday the 13th, the Crusades, the Knights Templars, the Assassin Order, the Illuminati?
Well, you know, I wasn't thinking specifically so much about the Friday the 13th angle, but it's true. That's the reason why it's the creepy day. It was created because that was the day the Templars, Jacques de Molay and his Baphomet worshipping cultist Manichaean, you know, pseudo satanic or actually satanic followers or leading disciples were burnt. What's the connection between that and today? Well, that's a great question. And I think that if you think about it, I'm trying to think of the best way of saying this. Some of these subtle, longer currents of history that a lot of us don't pay enough attention to are really, really important. And the oligarchy has, as you pointed out, they're trained to have a much greater appreciation for the long, subtle waves of history that mean a lot to them. And numerology, Kabbalism means a lot to these figures. It has a lot. So it's like, it's not like there isn't, and the reason, again, like we were saying earlier, the reason why this kind of continues over so many generations is because it participates in something truthful. So just to say, like, astrology is generally speaking bunk. We have free will. As Shakespeare said through Cassius to Brutus in Julius Caesar, our fate is not in our stars, but in ourselves that we are underlings. And that's been the lack of appreciation of that fact, that bit of wisdom, has resulted in superstitious idiots going along with things that ultimately destroy their families, their societies, themselves, their nations over thousands of years. Because the oligarchy, you know, most people are not going to become self-aware of the evil that they are doing. Most people are not going to do it. It has to masquerade in some form of veneer of sweetness to cover the poison below the surface. That goodness, that appearance of goodness has to be there in order for people to take it in and not realize that they've just taken in Trojan horses. There are quantizations in the universe, you know, like there are certain electron orbitals, there are certain planetary orbits that have quantized expression. It's not just any random orbit that we find a series of orbits, which, as great discoverers have proven since the time of Pythagoras, but were really proven with Kepler in the early 17th century. These are where we find them, the planetary orbits, based on a harmonic ordering principle, based on the speed at the quickest and slowest speed of each planet on an ellipse around the sun, has the relationship that they do because of a musical principle that we find already there before modern science was created in ancient flutes that people have dug up in like Mongolia and Asia. They've found these flutes with holes tuned in such a manner that when you play them, it is the well-tempering system, with which means certain frequencies emerge that give pleasure to the soul when it receives certain like fourths, fifths. You know, you take a string, you divide it in half, you get an octave, you divide it by three, take two thirds, you get a fifth, divide by four, right? Take three fourths, play it compared to the whole, you get a fourth, and you can build an entire musical octave, and it gives pleasure to the soul. The relationship of each of those frequencies, it can be used in all great compositions, and it is. So that was already intuitive knowledge based on a principle of beauty, intuitively understood for thousands of years before modern civilization even emerged with written records onto the scene. That was already there. And then it just so happened that we were able to prove with more advanced data that actually the entire planetary system has a sort of song musical quality about it, which, again, for people like Ben Franklin or a Kepler or any of these greats whose identities have been largely obscured or slandered or written out of our history books, they understood when you read their writings that this changes everything about how we've been organizing our affairs on the earth around this master-slave structure of dominance, with, you know, a hereditary elite of people born into master families believing that they're divinely ordained to be an elite superior class above the many slave families that have their populations culled. They have to have their access to the motion of their minds, right? What fields of motion your mind is allowed to move in has to be very limited to acceptable concepts of what the universe is, what law is, what your human nature is. So there's very controlled, small domains physically and mentally that we're allowed to move in. And to do that unnatural limitation requires a sort of cultural fabric that awakens a sense of passion in the bestial things about us. Because we're not all angels and we're not all monkeys. You know, we got a little bit, we dance in both worlds. And right. So that old story goes, you know, that's, I think, a Native American gospel, or not a gospel parable, but, you know, there's an old wise man is describing to a young student that we all have two wolves within us, the wolf that loves wisdom and the wolf that loves the lower things. And the kid says, well, and he's describing a story of the fight between the two wolves, and the kid's like, which one wins? And he's like, well, whichever one you feed. So that's understood. There's certain types of musical and artistic and other expressions and stories that have a certain character that bring out the lower wolf or the higher wolf. So the Crusades, we're on the verge right now of a very dangerous revival that already kind of began in large measure. I think a big watershed moment was probably the decision to create Al-Qaeda as it has come to be known, with Zbigniew Brzezinski in the 70s.
Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. Al-Qaeda Islam by funding like radicalizing madrasas, right? In order to provide a perverse form of radical, fanatical readings of the Quran into the minds of a lot of poor, disenfranchised, alienated young people in especially Afghanistan, but all around the world, in the Arab world. You had this was focused, and the idea was geopolitically on one level, suck in the Soviet Union into a quagmire that would wear them down, which it did, and destroy them slowly. But the other thing was to create a replacement for the America's nemesis of the commies, because it was understood, okay, well, the oligarchy unifies us around enemy images that they have to then create. Because you could unify people around either hope or fear. Those are the two ways to unify a society. If you're a Martin Luther King, you'll unify them, organize your followers around hope, and a reasonable hope, not a Obama hope, because it involves personal responsibility, right? Not just sitting back and waiting like a QAnon person for like the white hats to save the day, but it's like everybody has to take personal responsibility. And that's the good kind of hope that you earn. And then you've got the fear, the Hitlerian or Obama type of like, we should all be afraid of some external force that threatens us. And in the case of what Zbigniew was thinking with the Trilateral Commission operatives like Kissinger and David Rockefeller and so many others,
Their logo is the Templar logo. I mean, Council of Foreign Affairs. Council of Foreign Affairs. It's like riding the horse.
Oh yeah, the Council of Foreign Relations. Yeah.
You know, it looks similar. Like I'm always looking.
It might have a crusading little tip of the hat there. I wouldn't be surprised. And so part of what they wanted to do was create a type of expression of Islam that would be conducive for a counter-gang reaction in terms of creating a renewed variation of crusading identities among different segments of the highly manipulated Western transatlantic population of Europe and North America, mostly. That would be part of the NATO cage. And also, Israel has been used heavily in this as well. So you have British manipulation of the Middle East. I mean, the whole Muslim Brotherhood, as which was created as a an ideological way of reading the Quran that became the foundation stone upon which Al-Qaeda was created with U.S. taxpayer money later on, as part of what was known as the Ark of Crisis, basically generate within the heart of Eurasia. The idea was take, you know, the danger of an alliance of India, China, Pakistan, Russia, which represent different civilizational forces. Iran was a big one. In order to subvert the dangerous alliance of these different civilizational entities, create within their belly, around which they all, an area geographically around which they all connect, which is the Middle East and North Africa and down, create radical Islamic groups that would then be used as weapons in jihad against by Anglo-American Satanists, who are ultimately very happy with these groups killing both other Muslims, and which they do, most people who are victims of the Muslim Brotherhood in the before ISIS and Al-Qaeda, or ISIS and Al-Qaeda today, are Muslims. It's not, and but then they're happy also killing Christians. They're happy if they kill Jews. They don't care. They want chaos, and they want to create an amplification of an excuse for ultimately what is a new crusade. Now, today, inside of Israel, at the same time as the British were creating the Muslim Brotherhood, whose founder received money from the British Empire in Cairo, and there's a whole story. That's two chapters in my wife's book go through this.
Yeah, but that's one of my biggest questions is how, like, this Anglo-American establishment is, like, creating Muslim Brotherhood and creating Israel, like, Zionists, I guess. Yeah. Like, that it's not Muslims, Jews. You got this hidden shadow puppet getting these people to do these bloodshed ritual stuff to keep it destabilized so they can control the world through this this zone or so.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And so, yeah, the British Empire was busy funding people like Jamal al-Din al-Afghani, who was the founder of Salafism in the 1880s. This is after they declared war and sufficiently defeated Egypt and came out, now Britain controlling the Egyptian economy, running it into the ground, and controlling all of the local puppet leaders that would be there. And the one of the things after that they had to do is then destroy the Ottoman Empire, because the Ottoman Empire was still sort of an entity that had sovereign capacity to act. And it wasn't a good thing, but it wasn't one dimensional either. There were good people within it who were like, holy shit, we've been manipulated a lot. We're going into the ground. We're it's coming to an end. And it had been around for like 800 years, right? Since Ertugrul's son, Osman, emerged onto the scene. A lot of that time, the Ottoman Empire had been manipulated to be a marcher lord on behalf of advisors who would be sent into the Sultan's courts and give him advice on what to do, which was Venice. These were Venetian advisors going back to the 13th century who would then convince and persuade various leaders within the Ottoman Empire to go and invade Constantinople, go and tear down and destroy their libraries, and it basically became a useful way to justify radicalizing dumb, useful, idiot Christians in Europe to join orders that would be crusading orders to take back Jerusalem. And this was launched with the first one at the end of the 11th century. The Templars were created by a certain Satanist masquerading as a Cistercian priest named Bernard de Clairvaux, whose writings can be still read. He was an enemy of one of the great Augustinian Platonists of his day called Peter Abelard. And they were arch nemeses. Abelard was like one of the best human beings of the world, kind of like a Ben Franklin grand strategist of that time, trying to stop the Bernard de Clairvaux networks. Clairvaux himself oversaw the creation of two of his disciples who became popes in that same time. And he's the one who wrote the constitution for what became the Templar Order, a new sort of mercenary Christian order. Because one of the problems, the difficulties for the empire, the imperialists, which is, I'm talking now about the leading families dominant during the Roman Empire, who managed the mystery cults, the satanic, Gnostic mystery religions, of the ancient times, pre and even post-Christian. These groups, these families, they were desperate to get this type of religious war to so that you divide to conquer, right? You get everybody to fight each other, and then you control the chaos. One of the things about Christianity is it really emphasizes a lot of peace and, you know, like turning the other cheek and, you know, loving your enemy and
forgiveness.
Not conducive for like creating a mercenary warrior class of killers. It's sure. hard to kill. So they're like, how do we do that? And so Clairvaux's idea was, okay, I'll create a legal argument around which a constitution to create this order will be then established, and then it was ordained by the Pope, called the Templars, to say when you're an infidel, like somebody who's a believer in Islam, you lose your subhuman. The laws that are applicable in the Bible to not killing humans only works for humans, but for people who don't qualify as humans, hence the Muslims, you can do that, and you could be an instrument of righteous goodness when you do that. And if you plunder their villages and you kill their and you rape their women, that's okay too. Now, the thing about that was that wasn't too much of an issue because a lot of the Templars were also encouraged to bug each other. So it was like an all-male operation, which had a whole like ethos around the idea of the revival of the old Spartan Theban warrior cult of like these men who are like, they go to battle, they fight hard and they play hard together. You know, like
they have like orgies and stuff together, I heard.
Yeah. So that was a big part of the conditioning process. Now, later on, keep that in mind, that when Zbigniew Brzezinski was coming in with the Trilateral Commission, they were carrying out something called the Revolution in Military Affairs. And one of the guys who was assigned to carry this out was Samuel P. Huntington. Now, the idea that Huntington put forth was the need to transform the U.S. military and military ethos from being the type of citizen soldier that was based earlier, that had animated most of America's history. You know, the farmer who goes to defend his family as a citizen, his sword can be turned into a plow again, or, you know, like, or an agricultural instrument.
Like a ninja.
Like an, I guess the good ethic of the ninja. Yeah. Where you're not a professional military mercenary. You're not that. There's not a professional soldier class. Whereas Huntington was like, no, we need professional mercenary classes modeled on the Spartan Theban model of people who know how to obey orders, not think for themselves, follow chain of command. Kind of the British were already doing that with their chain of command stupidity that did a lot of damage, but they wanted that now in the American system, but more like tightened up. They also wanted to model it on, you know, the sort of thing that Cecil Rhodes had overseen with the creation of his Rhodes Scholar operation, modeled on the Jesuit Constitution in South Africa, putting down the Boer Wars, or carrying out the Boer Wars in the 1897 and 1902. This is where Lord Milner, all the stuff that Carol Quigley talks about, the idea was to create a tight-knit grouping, like, for example, the Milner Kindergarten, where a lot of the leading figures who play a very big role in creating the Council on Foreign Relations in 1921, the Chatham House groupings, the Rhodes Scholarship Trust Fund. Yeah, that's Milner. He oversaw like a grouping of young sociopathic boys who would be his disciples. They would do all sorts of God knows what together in their private little orgiastic parties. And then they'd go out and they'd kill black people and everybody, right? So it's part of that whole thing that they then wanted to expand, and they did with the U.S. military transformation during the Vietnam War was a big one that created a new set of synthetic elitist cults inside of the U.S. military, around which people like Edward Lansdale was a leading figure in the psychological warfare operations in the Vietnam War, helping to train young elite super soldiers to like cut off the heads of Viet Cong soldiers and kill families and wipe out villages, like the My Lai massacre. Like, this became part of an sort of a satanic, that's him, Edward Lansdale. He's an advertising agent before he got pulled into the OSS and the CIA. He was one of the key pioneers of mind wars. And he really cut his teeth in Philippines first, then in Vietnam. And yeah, he oversaw like essentially this initiation process where you get recruits who will be your young boys who will be devoted to you to do things that are anti-human, that kill innocent people en masse, very satanically ritualistic, kind of like the stuff we saw under Milner in the Boer War. Same sort of experience, very unnatural experience. But you do that, and then they become the Michael Aquinos. You know, the head of the Temple of Set, who emerged under the control and influence in Vietnam of Lansdale and that network. And then he becomes what he became as far as somebody who advances this even further, bringing in a whole satanic mind war operation into U.S. military operations with the 7th and 8th Psychological Operations Battalions, and his Fort Bragg, you know, New Age reforms that he worked on with John Shannon, the guy who's made fun of in the Men Who Stare at Goats movie and book. That's real. That's a real story. Like, they actually brought that in, and it didn't disappear in the 80s. All of those people who were put through this new age psychedelic reform of trying to like explode goats' hearts by staring at them, overseen by people like Michael Aquino, head of the second in command of the Church of Satan, went on to become the leading advisors of things like Desert Storm, of 9/11, right? You're like, how did the US military allow itself to do stuff that is so unnatural and evil? How does such crazy happen? And you're like, that's how it happens. It happens because they created these little pseudo Masonic orders inside of the military based on a brainwashing operation that created satanic fanatics who have a very specific cosmology designed for them so that they have no humanity that they can access. They're highly superstitious. They're behind the whole like alien cult operation that they've been trying to create now for over a century is replaced the idea of like Judeo-Christian civilization with like UFOs created us, hence that story. And Aquino plays a direct role. He's working directly with these people like, there's a whole network around Harold Puthoff, who's a leading Scientologist, co-founder of the To the Stars Academy with Tom DeLonge.
Military asset right there.
He's a high-level CIA operative who was working with Jacques Vallée. He brought him in, gave him CIA clearance in the 70s to work on the Stargate project that was then used to create the scientific foundations for parapsychology, ESP, talking to interdimensional beings, other things. That was then brought in by Aquino and Paul Vallée to reform the military first in Fort Bragg, and then they expanded it outward to a variety of other parts of the military. John Alexander, that's him. John Alexander is very close to Michael Aquino. John Alexander is a guy who he worked with Harold Puthoff as part of the aviary of UFO psyops in the 80s and into the 90s, and with people like another member of that grouping funded by a billionaire, Robert Bigelow, was Jacques Vallée, who introduced the interdimensional alien hypothesis, which is now becoming the thing pushed more heavily, designed to reform all of our sacred myths of ourselves, going so far as to say that these aliens live in other dimensions. These are the demons or the pixies or the fairies that different folklores of different cultures have talked about as actually aliens. That's what Jesus was interfacing with that gave him powers or whatever. And so the whole thing is just one giant mindfuck psyop that they've been working on for a long time. And they're trying to make it cool and into the pop culture as well.
With movies, music.
Yeah. And it's totally tied to the Crusades and the revived Templar orders that created these mercenary classes that were tied. I mean, the Templars controlled international banking operations, debt slavery. They got everybody into every kingdom was induced to get enmeshed in impossible debt repayment schemes. Very, very, very nefarious operation. And when it was clamped down upon by a French pope, a French king, and a pope at Friday the 13th in the 13th century, a lot of their operations went underground or changed, were rebranded. A lot of it went to Scotland. I've seen some evidence that Robert the Bruce, who backstabbed William Wallace earlier, was actually a high-level Templar in disguise who protected them and cult incubated them inside of Scotland. But they sort of went underground in a variety of places. But the later emergence of Rosicrucianism that came out of a lot of these Kabbalistic sects, because there was also a focus on rebuilding Solomon's Temple. That's where the Templars had their headquarters under the what's today the Holy of Holies, on this Temple Mount area underneath which was the HQ for the Templars, where they did a lot of their Baphomet worshiping operations. So part of it was always enmeshed with this myth of rebuilding the King Solomon's Temple that had been destroyed in the first century Rome. A lot of this had a Babylonian form of brainwashing tied to what's known as the Kabbalah, which effectively is one of the many instruments used by these oligarchs to depattern. It's kind of like the I Ching. It's one of these things where you could use it for good or for bad. It's a way of looking at the Torah, which treats the Torah as if it's just sounds, like just symbols latched together as one giant like sort of sentence. But when you read the Torah, you learn moral lessons. Like you're reading sentences in paragraphs with stories that your mind can follow, simply to get some moral lesson on why you shouldn't kill or something. Now, What they do with the Kabbalah method is they say, oh, no, 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 no. That's for the uninitiated. They're reading thoughts and getting ideas reasonably. No, 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 no. That's for the simple people, the initiates who have gone through the rites of experience, the rites of initiation. We know how to read things by turning our mind off and just reading the sounds under, and certain incense can be created to create a climate with a candle where you're just making the sounds associated with each letter. That puts you into more of a trance-like state and overseen by a guiding elect above you who can sort of prepare your experience however they see fit. It's hypnotic spells, basically. They do it as well with runes. You know, this is where the Nazis who had their own Templar, new Templar order that Himmler created. They're all fascinated by it in various ways, except they less so in the Kabbalah. They were also big in the Kabbalah, but they added to it rune worship as well, you know, which is essentially just taking these symbols used in the script of old Viking civilizations. And that's where the SS and a lot of the symbology from the Nazis came out of in the Thule Society. And then you just take these runes, you just dump them on the ground and you have an elected priest read where they fell as if now that's Odin or Thor telling you what to do and who to go to war with. It's sort of the same kind of thing. You got the Asian mysticism too with the I Chings, the abuse of the I Ching. Because if you could be a good person and with the I Ching, you know, you could randomly land on a page and look, it's very symbolic language, and you could find a life lesson if you're a wise, good person that will be applicable, like an astrology chart, right? Like in all situations in life, you're like, oh, okay, you should, you know, be more rigorous with your thinking, less, you know, more considerate with your wife, stuff like that. And that's what this story represents for you. And it could be a good thing, but with the oligarchy, they could also use this to create soothsaying and the manipulation of the occult by superstitious idiots who then become instruments for their own destruction, which the Crusades were all about. And so that was it. It was just get these different religions who have everything in common to work, like every reason to work together. Judaism and Christianity and Islam all came from Abraham's ideas or the Abrahamic faith at different times throughout history. They have worked to leading representatives from all of them have worked together based on common ideas like we all hate evil, we all hate Satan, we all love God, we all love the good, we're all made in the image of God, even if we won't fight over the different rituals that we have or the different interpretations, we're going to focus on what we have in common. We're all going to die as people, but our kids will live after us. We want to make a better world for them. So you had these types of movements that the oligarchy despises whenever you have like wise people representing these various faiths, especially in Charlemagne's time, but there's times even before that. We unify, we work together against the oligarchy, and and we don't fight each other. They want us to fight each other. So that's where they want these different breeds of radicalizing ignorant Christians who don't think for themselves. They just listen to some priests who and are happy with their illiteracy so that they will become mercenaries and go to war in some land they don't even understand. And the same thing for the ISIS variations of Islam. They want that type who just knows how to follow what your radicalizing imam, usually on a Venetian or CIA payroll, is telling you to do, which is go and do jihad. You know, you'll have a global caliphate, burn the world so that the Mahdi can come. And each one has like their own end times evil spin, right? Where you got like
Cell phone too, with the cell phone and the television and the mind programming. Now, like everybody's going through an initiation, being manipulated emotionally and whatnot, to like next level. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. No, it's much more popularized now. And of course, it's a more diffused version of it for the masses who are also, we're being put through our own hypnotic initiation process. But you know, you got it. Like they've normalized things like the MK Ultra experiments that advance things like psilocybin, mushrooms, DMT,
right.
All that stuff came out of the military intelligence operations in the 50s and 60s. And has been now normalized. So people walking around in their office space everyone's kind of got low level depression because right. We're like living in an unnatural world that we're told we have to adapt to and everything is normal. And you kind of know deep down that nothing is, but it naturally will cause depression. And so you got people who are like it's more normal now to be microdosing DMT or other forms of psychedelics just to like live in this messed up world. And in some cases, increasingly, it's being amplified that this is actually a gateway to a new, better spirituality. Because if you don't like materialism that you've been told to live in, that's superficial and that's destructive. Living in a consumer society that's going nowhere. So now we know that that's bad, but now you have this big void of, well, what if you can't fill it with cheap stuff from China, you know, in the shopping malls, if that's not going to fill the void, because we're living through a big economic collapse and maybe general war, well, what are you going to fill that void with? Well, you know, a new drug-laced spirituality is good, because you get a lot of very high intensity emotional effects, a lot of mind-altering experiences that depattern old neural pathways of the brain with providing these psychedelics. So that could be now treated or reframed as an authentic pathway towards spiritualism, which right there, as soon as you take that door, now you're in a place where it's going to be really difficult to pull yourself back into some sense of reasonable thinking.
This report that you did, I mean, I've read this article on what the UFOs, Lawrence Rockefeller, and MK Ultra have in common. Over 3 to 6 times. I studied this report and went deep. And it seems like they want to introduce, I mean, you got Stanford experts, big YouTube channels pushing the psychedelics and the UFO narrative with all these CIA people. It just feels like that's the new religion that they're developing, going back to H.G. Wells and all these connections, getting onto the drugs, John C. Lilly, the new Aleister Crowley, according to Timothy Leary, to change what you're talking about, autonomic nervous system. It's crazy. John C. Lilly, interesting character. He goes into the dolphin research.
Guy who's like doing LSD, doing, and giving dolphins LSD as well. Oh, yeah, yeah, right. They call them.
Yes. It's kind of weird because Mars Attacks, the alien brains, they look like dolphin brains. And the dolphins they were communicating with, the government funded through their own work that they were doing it so they could communicate with the aliens in the ocean.
Right.
As most of the UFOs are coming out of the ocean. And here's Timothy Leary with him. Timothy Leary called his work on metaprogramming as the computer. The human is like a computer that can be programmed and whatnot. It seems like it's all coming together from what I'm kind of putting together, and let me know if this is the right, I'm on the right path, is that Jew, Muslim, Christian, everybody is being played by hidden hands to pretty much kill each other, keep things destabled. It seems like they're setting up a new religion what it seems like with the aliens and whatnot.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. That's been the big obsession. So I came to this original. Hey, cute.
he's a Russian blue. So he's my Russian blue.
Cool. That's a really nice cat. Yeah, I can see why the Egyptians really were enthralled by these divine beasts. Eh? Like, there's such a dignity about them and a sense of superiority where they just kind of. They know they're kind of better than you on some level.
This is going to get weird. We like to get weird over here. I have a friend who said that the Templars were sniffing cats, like butts and whatever, for the toxoplasmosis, because it makes them go crazy where they're fearless.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know where he heard that from or whatever, but we like to look at all the weirdness. All
right, that's a challenge for researchers out there to prove or disprove that one. I'd be curious. they do some, I mean, this is zany stuff. Like, it's really to get it. That's why it's so difficult for a lot of people to conceptualize the real nature of evil. It's not what you think it is based on the type of thing that's promoted in our pop culture and Hollywood movies and Lex Luthor and all that. It's not that. It requires an appreciation for a coexistence of what seems to be two opposite things, which is like a quality of brilliance. Like, there's a certain almost awe-inspiring, in a disgusting way, brilliance to their self-discipline and doing things systematically. Like, we really underestimate the power of genius in an evil, perverse sense. But that's there. That's how this stuff maintains itself over many generations. That's why a lot of people don't believe that conspiracies can happen, because they're like, people are too dumb for that. We can't even keep a secret at the workplace, let alone over more than, you know, two generations. And it's like, no, you just happen to swim in a culture of mediocrity that's been created for you, so you don't appreciate your own genius, and thus you can't appreciate how your own genius could be also perverted to do evil, which is not withheld from those who are born into these higher castes. self-professed casts or who are recruited into it because they have talent, like H.G. Wells from the poor, you know, servant family, but he had sardonic wit, sociopathic talent, a creative energy that was admired by those who didn't have, who were more stagnant within the upper crust of the elite. And they're like, we need some new blood. Let's recruit this guy
yeah,
in.
Let's shake it up a little bit. Yeah.
Let's have him sniff some cat butts and see how far he goes. And it's like, oh yeah, he went far.
Was that the original Project Bluebeam?
That's something I'm just beginning to look into a little bit. But I think it does play a big role. Obviously, like I brought up Edward Lansdale already.
Mm-hmm.
Lansdale is sort of, he set the framework for what became, I think, the more modern Project Bluebeam, because he actually is the one to first outline with his plans to overthrow Castro in Cuba. He put forth a program which JFK rejected in 1961 called Elimination Through Illumination. And the idea was to use high intensity lights to project the image of the second coming of the Christ over Cuba, and then have leaflets and propaganda to convince the Cuban people that Christ disapproves of Castro's leadership, and that the Americans going in would to overthrow Cuba, Castro would be sort of ordained by God. And JFK said no to that. He also said no to Operation Northwoods at the same time as he was rejecting this. But Lansdale set into, I think he created the template around which more advanced holographic technology in the 90s and into the present day could then be used to give us the image. Like, and you see anomalies like over China a few years back, there was like this city, this hologram of a giant city that appeared in the sky, and it freaked out a lot of Chinese people. And they did the same thing in Brazil, where like the holographic appearance of like a Jesus figure on a cross just appeared. I think they're sort of trying it out, right? They're still like sort of testing the psych response to this sort of thing. But yeah, I think Lansdale did a lot of that. And Lansdale also innovated something that I think has been used by the cattle mutilators as well, that really exploded in the early 70s.
I did a deep dive on that.
When he was in the Philippines, he innovated something to put down the socialist guerrillas who were fighting the American puppet, whose name I'm forgetting, in 54. And so he was assigned to figure out how do you defeat this force of guerrilla warfare. And he realized, oh, we could look for the folklore and superstitions. We'll profile them. And, you know, he knew his stuff and found that they had a belief in their religion of these beings, kind of like vampires that would like suck your blood in the forest. And what they would do is they would kidnap either members of the guerrillas or even civilians, kill them, drain them of blood, and leave them hanging on trees upside down with little puncture wounds in their neck. And this was done over the course of many months, and it worked so well to break the will of the fighters that they all scattered, left, and then the government, the pro-American puppet regime was installed. And then he went and did similar things in Vietnam for 10 years afterwards. So I think a lot of this was done, you know, as well, when you see the way that some of the cattle had been like left after being mutilated across the United States farms. Oftentimes there were puncture wounds placed into the cattle after they were drained of blood, and they had some of their, you know, their organs removed, sexual and other organs. There's probably a variety of things done, but I think that was one of them, was to amplify the myth. What do you got there?
So this myth of the cow mutilation is stemming from these human mutilations where they would do the same thing with the human and like suck them dry. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, these were, like I said, Filipino civilians and resistance fighters who were killed and drained of blood and puncture wounds were left in their necks. And I think that sort of psych profile was applied to then the Americans to cater to the new folklore that they were trying to create. And like Rand Corps, the CIA were putting out psychological studies on how to create new folklore for the catered to the American psyche in a specific age, as well as use that for psychological warfare against the American people itself. Part of it was also like, how do we give a new explanation to the experimental drones and flying saucer technology that we're actually cultivating after we they absorbed all these German and Italian aerospace engineers into the U.S. military industrial complex, put a big giant secrecy cage on top of a lot of it. A lot of these guys in Germany and in Italy had been working on flying saucer technology. It's a different approach to aviation. And this was like, you know, a lot of the files were classified. There's still some pictures circulating, some documentary evidence circulating, but a lot of it was destroyed. But when people would look out their windows, starting in the earliest days of the Cold War, and would sometimes see weird things flying about that they couldn't explain, or an unvetted fighter pilot without security clearance would look out of his window and see some formation of like 7 or 8 flying devices, whether they were drones or whether there were one of these early flying saucer devices that were created by the Victor Schauberger. Who knows? But, you know, they didn't know what they were looking at. They would go and they would file a report to their superior officer on the Air Force base. And then they would be told, oh, this is actually what you're seeing, but shh, keep it secret or else, you know. And so they cultivated an air of secrecy within the military and within the Air Force and within the intelligence community around. That was really the trophy, was to, if you could get somebody who is in the military, especially higher up, to really believe it, because they're not in the know, but to really believe it, or especially like an astronaut, like a Mitchell or a Harrison Schmitt or something. If you that's worth more than 20,000 or a million regular plebe civilians believing it. Like, so they put a lot of work.
You got the guy, the leader, the leader is all of his followers.
Yeah.
And the Schmidt guy held the first conference of the cow mutilation.
That's what created Paul Benowitz, and like poor Paul Benowitz, right? Who's documented it at length in Mirage Men, which is a great book and made into a really good documentary, which everyone should watch if they haven't. Really solid stuff.
I watched Mirage Men from your recommendation and like looked into the whole, also the Podesta connection to all the UFO documentaries out there with Blink-182 guy.
Again, some of the stuff turns out to be almost like kind of like a sick joke for some of these social engineers, you know, like using Tom DeLonge, who they don't respect this idiot kid at all. He's a pothead bringing useful tool, and they just need a cover guy, like cardboard cutout, to be associated with these new agencies that they want to bring into being. But they can't say who they actually, you know, you need somebody to attribute this thing to. So they pick this kid who, again, you just listen to his interviews. They don't respect intellects like that. It's people like Harold Puthoff, who's the co-founder of the To the Stars Academy. That's who you really want to look at, who's much, much higher level and self-aware of what he's a part of as a leading Scientologist and creator of this whole thing.
It's like you said, you get one of these top military Schmidt guys who supposedly took the picture of the blue marble holding the cow mutilation conferences and whatnot. Yeah. You get a celebrity. The celebrity is the mystic, and that has so much power. Even Trump, he became good friends with Michael Jackson. In his book, Art of the Comeback, he says that Michael Jackson would make the bankers, more powerful bankers, tremble because of the stardom of, like, so they have more people at a Drake concert, you know, than at a Biden rally. The artists like Tom DeLonge, just to get all the masses into it.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a power there. There's a power there for sure. But back to the Paul Benowitz thing, he was originally brought in because he was also obsessed with cattle mutilations. And when he was at a Harrison Schmitt sponsored conference, that's when he got really radicalized even more so. And because he was also the head of he was a bit of a brilliant electrical engineer who was a contractor for the U.S. Air Force in New Mexico near Albuquerque. He was very well respected, and he had a lot of like radar devices that he made himself, and they were just lying around his house. So when he started looking out at night near the Air Force base that he could see out of his house window, he would see these strange, you know, flying devices popping in and out. And so he started popping his radar equipment, pointing it at the direction, started picking up signals, reported some of that to the Air Force contacts he had on base, then said, we can use this. And they basically drove this guy insane. And a few characters, a couple of players come out playing a big role. Doty, Bill Moore, both of these guys, one works for Air Force Intelligence, Doty, and the other one, Moore, is tied to an entire PSYOP that created sort of like everyone who's into this knows about the Roswell incident. It was popularized entirely because of this guy's book that he co-wrote with a former high up official in military intelligence called the Roswell Incident. He also did something called the Philadelphia Experiment, as well as another sort of pseudo fiction, nonfiction book that popularized this. And they were touring all of the UFO conferences. They were very trusted by Paul Benowitz, and they started giving Paul Benowitz insider information about what a grouping of insiders in the military want the people to understand. They want to use Paul to be instrument of that truth. They want to signal the alarm bells that there's this hybrid aliens who like crashed in Roswell, had a deal cut out with Eisenhower, And one variation of these aliens is kind of okay that we've been working with and getting our tech from. And they're at war with the Greys, the bad ones, who tend to be, you know, often working with the Russians and the Chinese. And they created this whole stupid story for poor Paul Benowitz. And he was, and they were saying, well, the dangerous thing, Paul, is that they're about to break their agreement. And they gave him basically to, as part of his recruitment to this special project, they gave him computers and new software that would help de-encrypt messages he was getting from the Air Force base, so-called aliens, who also apparently had a headquarters under some mountain system around which they brought the cattle and the humans that they were abducting to suck their organs. They had a whole story on that too. Within the Air Force computing software that they gave him, they controlled the data that would both come in. So they were creating the signals for his device to pick up, and they were controlling what messages he would then read on his software. And the person who provided that software was Harold Puthoff, who supplied this to Bill Moore, who then gave it to Paul Benowitz. And Puthoff is, like I said, the guy who co-created Two of the Stars Academy with Tom DeLonge later on. He also was part of the National Institute for Discovery Science operation set up by Robert Bigelow that had this weird parapsychology infusion with aliens in the 90s. He worked also with Jacques Vallée together on the Stargate project at the Stanford Research Institute. That's Robert Bigelow, the billionaire who funded Senator Reid, who created the Pentagon Defense Research Facility for aerial threats. So that's one of the agencies that they had to create to popularize the congressional inquiries into UFOs now underway, around which Grutsch is a whistleblower. But that was Robert Bigelow's operation with Puthoff, who I think was the brains behind that operation. He worked also with agencies, people like John Alexander, the colonel, who worked with Michael Aquino, who was another science advisor to this agency that Bigelow created with Puthoff. So all that to say, poor Paul Benowitz was driven insane. And he was given this whole scenario that the aliens were going to betray their agreement with the U.S. government and were going to attack America and drain us of our bodily fluids and steal our organs. And so he went nuts. He blamed his wife at a certain point for being at the heart of the alien conspiracy. They had to put him into a hospital. I think I don't know if he died of a suicide or not, but it was bad. And they knew what they were doing and they did it anyway. And he would also wake up in the middle of the night. As the Mirage Men documentary goes through, he would wake up in the middle of the forest, having been abducted from his bed with like puncture wounds in his arm, implying that they were doing MK Ultra style experimentation on him physically the whole time that this was happening.
In the news today, they're on the Drudge Report. I always look at the Drudge Report. I feel like Drudge Report's mainstream media, you know, and they put all these articles on there, and the Epoch Times. I remember you talking about Epoch Times, and what's the connection to Falun Gong, Epoch Times stuff? I remember you talking about.
Yeah, it's a tough one for a lot of people because Epoch Times has done useful reporting on a variety of domestic U.S. conspiracy, and they do a good job criticizing the Great Reset. It's ultimately a psyop. I'm sorry. In my research, yeah, the Falun Gong is a synthetic sort of Asian Scientology cult that was created in the early 90s. The connections to Scientology are actually very strong. Unlike L. Ron Hubbard, who developed his pseudoscience, like his sci-fi cult religion, mm-hmm. around the idea of purging the initiates of alien beings from other dimensions that are like that are all over us and the cause of all of our psychological dysfunctions and bad emotions, and we have to purge them through auditing to go through operating thetan levels, kind of very Masonic level of operation. Now he uses in the scientific West sort of electrical auditing, where you're holding these electrical devices as part of the spiritual experience. Now L. Ron Hubbard, keep in mind, he was a devoted follower of Aleister Crowley. He was a member of the OT, the Ordo Templi Orientis. He was both working with Crowley and others, doing like radical Babylon working sex magic to try to bring in the Antichrist and all this weird shit. So he was already totally in that. He was a Satanist. And then he created, as he was a Satanist, the Scientology as a new religion. His son, who defected from the Scientology organization, later on gave an interview to Penthouse magazine where he describes how, when he was asked what type of religion did you guys practice in the household with your father, occult, he basically says it was Satanism. We did black magic Satanism. And they're like, did you mean your father was the worshiped Satan? And he's like, no, you don't understand. If you believe you are Satan, you don't worship anybody, right? You believe you're the most powerful being in the world. So L. Ron Hubbard, with his hyperactive imagination and deep immersion in occultism under Crowley, basically rebranded some of those sex magic rituals that were designed to repattern the identity around something more liberated, around a whole lifetime, as his son describes it. And L. Ron Hubbard also describes how he ultimately is the Antichrist in a document circulated in 1981 from his own hand, where he describes that, you know, you can interpret the revelation, the book of Revelation, the coming of the Messiah, as being what the Christians say, or what it truly is, which is the invasion of the Markabian order, this sort of pseudo human civilization that's 20,000 years old that will invade according to prophecy. And it's not Christ, but this Markabian order that will invade us and steal our bodily fluids unless they are thwarted. And so he says, in that sense, I am the Antichrist. My job is to stop the second coming of Christ. This, as you know, so that's part of his spin. But he's a Satanist. So the thing with Lee Hongji, who's the founder of this weird Asian Scientology cult, gave an interview to Time Magazine in 1999, where he describes his view of himself as an intergalactic messiah figure in order to stop this invasion of the Earth of these body-snatching, interdimensional demon aliens who have been creating modern science, which he says is the consequence of these demon forces. And it's his job to stop them. And they really want our bodily organs, especially our organs, and the organs of the Falun Dafa people who follow his practice of I Ching, which I Ching is a fine ancient art of balancing your chi. And, right. You have electrical.
I'm all about that. Yeah,
it's totally cool.
Wu Qi Gong.
No. And that's what attracts a lot of like Westerners to Falun Gong, is they just see people doing these breathing exercises to balance your chi, and that's all well and good. And yeah, that's a win. And, you know, forbearance, compassion, love, all this good stuff. Yeah, good. But then you got this whole like pseudo OT operating system where you can then go into higher initiated processes and find yourself, if you're like really trusted, on the 400-acre compound in New York that Lee Hongji lives on and has been living on since China kicked him out back in 1997.
Wow.
And he's in CIA protection. He lives on this giant compound. It freaks out all of the neighbors around the compound because they're like, this is not helping property values. And you could be one of the people living in his special circle. And he, you know, there's defectors who have talked about how he professes to have the ability to read your mind, to read your bad thoughts, to heal from a distance, parapsychology stuff, big time. And his whole thing is that the Chinese are the ones who are being run by the evil aliens that Paul Benowitz was told were on the other side of the Iron Curtain. And the aliens that use the Chinese CPC, as they say, really want to suck our organs because we, through our breathing exercises of the Falun Gong, have the best organs in the world, so balanced, and we don't use modern medicine or anything. And that's also why a lot of them do have died in China. It's not because the Chinese are actually stealing their organs, it's that they get sick, they refuse medical treatment, then they die. And then we're told, oh, look, 1.5 million Falun Gong have died in 20 years. And it's like, well, part of that is like self-induced. And part of it too is that they just love the juicy organs. So it's basically that. And the other thing is that then they created, like, so there's never any evidence. It's all anecdotal evidence of people who are Falun Gong practitioners with glazed over eyes saying, yes, this happened in the Chinese. Like they created
the Epoch Times.
Yeah, and they created the New Tang Dynasty. And the New Tang Dynasty is a massive multi-billion dollar media operation that created Epoch Times as its political newspaper in early like 2001. It psychologically profiled the Christian conservatives of America to give them a story, a way of looking at the world that would appeal to them and their prejudices that were largely affected by what Americans went through, especially baby boomers during the Cold War, and the everyday propaganda of commie conspiracy out to kill you and take your freedoms. That was like pumped every day under nuclear terror under these kids living in the 50s, 60s. And so that trauma was never resolved. It was always sort of bubbling under the surface in the subconscious. So when they wanted to reinvoke it again, as they have now that China is not playing by the rules of the depopulation game and has kicked out Soros, kicked out their Lee Hongji guy, got out of the carbon emissions reduction treaty of the Paris Accords. That's what China just said. We're out. We're not doing that. Now, all of a sudden, they're reinvoking what's already been there in, like I said, the psyche. And that's what Epoch Times, part of their hypnotic role, is to win confidence over to their target audience around who watch Steve Bannon's War Room and stuff like that. And then when it comes to thinking, getting them to think about what's going on outside of America's borders, because they're not bad in terms of some of the stuff going on in the, you know, the manipulation inside of the US, that's where all of a sudden now they shape people's view about Russia, especially China, the Muslim world, around something that's more conducive to a crusading society that would go along with World War III and ultimately work with the Bidenite fanatic neocon left and the neocon right. Everybody all of a sudden finds themselves converged. And let me just add this one thing. Jake Sullivan, the Rhodes Scholar advisor to Biden, he gave an interview in 2019 to the China Project. In this interview, that's him, Jake Sullivan. In this interview, describing the need to create a new enemy myth for Americans. He's describing that. And he's like, look, it was so good in World War II. It was clear it was the Germans and the Japanese. That was our enemy. And then the Cold War, it was so good. It was clear it was the commie Chinese and Russians. That was our enemy. And then he's like, and then in the post 1992 age, it was the terrorists, the Islamic terrorists. That was our enemy. It was great. But he's like, now we're running out of options. So I'm going to read something he says, okay? This is going to be we're going to be making this into a documentary series, actually, at the end of this month. But he says, so there's an alternative strategy. And part of the reason that people are so into the idea of turning China into that next great enemy, well, there's something in it for everyone, honestly. I mean, just the way he talks, he's an idiot. I mean, there's something in it for the people writing articles in Foreign Affairs. That's the Council on Foreign Relations mouthpiece. There is something in it for progressives. That's like the Bernie Sanders people who want to see much more dramatic domestic investment in the USA. So I think that this is the direction we are heading in because there's something in it for everyone. It's win-win, right? But that very much concerns me. I would like to say that there is an alternative which is much more focused on a set of threats and challenges that require the United States to rally the world a la Independence Day, the movie, you know, like aliens are coming. And so I'm thinking if aliens came down, we'd rally the world and that would be a great story. And I think people would be totally psyched up for it to avoid global annihilation. And just saying, you know, that we're going to have an organizing principle for the U.S. foreign policy. And if that's the case, it's going to be China for now. So he's very clear. Like he's coming
very out. Clear on that's the end goal.
That's the momentary goal. Cause I think the end goal is the Independence Day alien invasion. That's what they really want to get to. But as a stepping stone for now, we'll have to get people around going to war with China.
I got all your links down below. Thank you so much, Matthew Arrett. I'm just so grateful. Much love, everybody, and God bless you. And then I wave at the end. That's what I'm saying.